Welcome to The Deb Colletti Show, an hour of opinions, commentary, and conversations with a wide range of people who have shown courage, integrity, and independent thinking to create a truly rich and rewarding life. Broadcast by Zeus Radio Network for Hear Women Talk. And now, here's your host, Deb Colletti.
Hi, Deb Colletti here with you every week on The Deb Colletti Show.
Funny how that works.
I know, along with Wes Tobin.
Wait, were you just mocking me? Deb Colletti Show.
Yes, I was.
You were. I thought you were.
Did
wow.
You get that? That's good.
I got it.
The way you say it, so professional, and I say Deb Colletti. Anyway.
Colletti.
Here with me is Wes Talbot making fun of me.
I know. You're making fun of me.
Okay. I'm mocking him. He's remarkable.
You know, you think I'm funny whenever I say that. She drags me out at parties and says, do that thing I have to say.
Go ahead. Do it.
This edition of Doctors on Call.
He's good, right? He's also the voice of NPR, PBS,
no, PBS,
and Bose. Yeah. And, you know, so that voice is a true professional. I'm an untrained professional. So there we have it.
But you have better thoughts than I do.
Well, we'll be the judge of that. Yeah. They'll be
the judge of that. Who's the guest today, Deborah?
Later on, our guests will be Medine and Salako and Joe Vinson, who are really interesting people. They both work together. They are life partners together. They met halfway through their life, later in life, and discovered this whole new connection and world.
But they're essentially artists.
They are artists.
Fine artists.
They're fine artists, yeah. They divide their time between Italy and New York, everyone's dream. Not everybody's dream, but a lot of people's dream to live in Tuscany.
Yes.
Under the Tuscan sun and live in downtown Lower East Village. They're part of the year, too. They do landscape painting classes in Tuscany. They do gastronomic tours with the White Truffle Festival, which is wild.
Yeah.
And, you know, white truffles. I didn't know they were white. They also have a gallery in Italy, and they have a studio here in Brooklyn.
We'll have all their website information on the website.
Yep.
Yes.
And how one can get over there for one of their painting classes and how they came to me. They are fascinating, a couple, great dynamic that just plays off each other so nicely. They've been together. Wasn't it interesting to see their...
It's a trying time for some couples that, they like to get up and one goes to work and one stays home, or they both go to work and they don't have to spend
parallel
24
lives,
hours
right.
together.
Yeah.
But they seem to found
a
nice
together.
Balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Been together 16 years. And what we evidenced here, what we were able to see is that they do... She's very strong. You'll hear she's very... But has a lot to talk about. He gets into detail. But they give and take so nicely.
Yes.
And I love the
finish
way
they each other's sentences.
Pretty much. That was well done there.
Thank you. As an example.
But what they talk a lot about is how they've learned about art together and discovered things, uncharted course that they've found, and it's only made their relationship richer and their painting richer. For our listening audience, it's very inspiring to see that they met in their mid-30s.
Well, that
40?
Was also a point they
yeah.
made, was that they had lived a lot of life
yeah.
before
he had been
they
married before.
Decided to meld their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that it was a big decision for her as an independent woman, having not been married, been in many relationships, that just didn't click. And this one clicked. And for her to let go and go, I'm a little scared now. What's it going to be like to travel together? She'll talk about that. But how she took risks, and she was the leader in the Italian brigade, so to speak. She had lived there 10 years previously. He was from Florida, so cool that he took that. And his family went, what, you're moving to Italy? All right.
Yeah, and he was a corporate guy.
Yeah.
But he had...
Living in Connecticut.
Yeah. Entrepreneurial skills, mm-hmm. which meshed well with Medine's.
And yeah.
It's cool.
And they balanced the struggling artist once they met, they were struggling artists creating this business by buying real estate and having the acumen to develop it, make it better, and flip it. And
right.
that's what sustained their business and kept them whole. They own 5 properties.
It's a great story of how, if you want to follow your life, there are a lot of different ways to do it. We talk a lot about changing it up here.
We've talked numerous times
about that.
And I hope I'm on my game for this whole show
because
traveling sets you back for sleep, but just sleep in general at a woman of a certain age who doesn't want to take Ambien anymore, who doesn't want to take Tylenol PM anymore. What do you do when you can't sleep at night?
What do you do?
Because, you know, we women with hormones and everything raging, I hear about it all the time. I have a particular thing that I've learned to do, and sometimes, most of the time it works. I listen to books on tape or podcasts or great radio shows. This is how I got into this business, actually, one of the ways, because I listen to everything. And putting those little earbuds in my ears is like my little friends, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like having mommy read to me. And I don't read the books I really like or really interested in because I will be asleep in 15 minutes and I have to read the next day again to fill in the holes, which I frequently do with the podcasts and other things. Tony Kornheiser is my dear best friend at 3 in the morning.
You are a Tony Kornheiser fanatic.
And for those of you that don't know him, he's fantastic. He's a sports guy come...
he's a sports guy.
You know... current events, issues.
He's on Pardon the Interruption.
Which I don't like the TV show. I love his radio show. I love it, and I'm addicted. So that's what I... And sometimes it's too interesting, and it keeps me up. But is it politically incorrect to say I've always thought of myself as a retard reader?
Yeah, that's politically incorrect.
It is. Well... It's how I always felt I was. I was not thought to be that smart growing up because I was dyslexic.
But you're very well read. You know.
Now. But now. Here's the twist and turn there, because at about 40-something, I realized, you know, I never thought I was stupid. But I wasn't that well read. Mm-hmm. And education was always scary for me, advanced, you know, higher education. But I eventually realized... I was dyslexic, and it went undiagnosed, as my children were eventually diagnosed. And they would be fine with me sharing that with you, and they've learned to compensate for it. But mm-hmm. I did not until 40-something.
Yeah.
And it became like a light bulb moment where I went, I can listen to books on tape. I can read The New Yorker. I can read things that would intimidate the hell out of me, the small print. I just shut it and go, I'm not meant to be a reader. Hmm. Well, I read 6 books a week sometimes in every periodical and get my hand by listening.
Gaps when you fall asleep.
With gaps. No, but I listen to them all the time in the car, on the beach, walking, working. You know, that's how I get my information. I am a listener, not a reader.
Yeah, and you love radio, and you love podcasts,
radio,
and you
love
internet
podcasts.
Radio.
And these days, you can get everything that way. Yeah. As I said.
Anytime you want. Stitcher.
Yeah.
Another great
Stitcher. Day. We
the
love
Deb Coletti
Stitcher.
Show. You can get the Deb Coletti Show
yeah,
on
along
Stitcher.
With Chelsea Handler on the same station. Right. I was very happy to same channel. So in good company. But you can get most everything in Audible now, and it's not such a well-kept secret. And I think why I like this business and why I'm very passionate about this show and podcasts, and for young people who have trouble reading and old people like my mom losing their eyesight, they need this. Mm-hmm. So just a plug for
I'm an audio guy, mm-hmm. as you know, and
yes.
we all know. Done a fair amount of video and on-camera stuff, too. But what we always like to say is there is no medium that is just visual.
Yes.
There, mm-hmm. you know, there is, you always have to have audio put with it. When you see video without audio, it's a closed captioning.
Well, it's a silent movie.
Right, exactly.
Which
but
was,
there is
had music overlaid.
Without video, and you can go about your day
right.
with it. You can drive, you can do the dishes, you can take a shower.
And it's on demand. Well, I guess TV is now on demand, but who can sit for a whole hour show anymore? Anyway, so... that's my moment.
I hope you are sharp enough for this interview today.
And somehow adrenaline gets me through. But I hope you find this conversation with Madine and Salako and Joe Vincent as fascinating as I did as we were doing it. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Deb Coletti Show. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to The Deb Coletti Show. Once again, here's your host, Deb Coletti.
Hi, I'm here with you, Deb Coletti, with my guest today, Joe Vincent and Madine how do you say it?
In Salako.
I practiced, and that's how I would have said it. Good. And once upon a time, I'm looking at your announcement, your wedding announcement, you've done something that people dream of doing. You live in Italy. You are artists in Italy. Tell us about Once Upon a Time.
Once upon a time in Italia, or once upon a time
when you met, things changed for you too.
Well, it's interesting because when we met, we had heard about each other. Mm. I think for a couple of years before we, initially met. Mm-hmm. I had been living in Italy for almost 10 years, and it turned out it was a friend of Joe's from art school who. Also, was another American. She was from New York. living in Italy. She was a graphic designer. We're still terrific friends. But when I was contemplating leaving that world behind, which was not a decision I took easily or lightly or slowly, it took 4 years. She said, "Oh, you know, you've got to meet my friend Joe."
And Joe was leading a whole other life at that time. You had had this
I'm living
path
up in
that you were on. Yeah, married.
And, actually, at that point, I was
divorced.
You were
divorced, yeah.
And
I think your life would not be anything different than that for many years.
Right. And Madine knew about this, about me, before I knew about her. Mm-hmm. And my friend that I'd gone to school with in Boston at the museum school had moved away after school, went to Rome, and there she met Madine. Mm-hmm. And on a trip to New York, she got in touch with a mutual friend of ours, and said, "Let's get together." And that's how I reconnected with Joni, who then introduced me to Madine.
Which you had heard of Joe already. Interesting. And at that point, spontaneous combustion when you met? What happened?
Oh, no.
No?
It was actually really sweet. And it's sort of like the dream.
Oh, no.
It wasn't a blind date. It wasn't a date.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, this woman is, she puts people together. In fact, she's responsible for three marriages, and one of them preceded us, then ours, and then another one.
What's her name? I know some people that need to know her.
Joni Morgante. I'll give you her website.
Her plug,
but she's a terrific person. In any event,
she does radio too.
Oh, really? Fun.
In Italy, that's something else. That's funny. But she owns an apartment in the East Village, mm-hmm. and comes back and is a graphic designer. And in the years before the internet, she was she would come back to America to just sort of, you know, get up to speed on the newest, like, innovations in mm-hmm. her field, because, you know, things tend to start in the United States. So, and then she would bring them back to her design studio in Rome. And on one of those occasions, I was here and I had quit the job in Rome, moved here, was in art school, in downtown. And she was in town and she said, we're all going out to a Chinese dinner tonight, why don't you come? And we were about 14 people. So it was very low key. There were a lot of single people, you know, male,
female.
That's
how it works. When you least expect it, you're out to dinner and there is the love of your life, perhaps.
And then she needed a ride home.
I needed a ride home.
The old I need a ride home thing.
But it was funny because he was living in Darien, Connecticut, and I was living up here. I was on like 102nd Street and West End Avenue. He was, you know, very polite. He offered to give me a ride home. And when we got there, I said, "Well, would you like to come up for coffee?" And I, meaning that 100%, not meaning
coffee.
Anything else.
Just coffee. We're just coffee.
Yeah.
Would you like to see my etchings? No.
I was at a point in my life where I just didn't think, honestly, that anything was really going to happen anymore.
Really? What was your background? Had you been married before?
I was never married before. I had, lived in, Europe for a really long time. I mean, I guess I was like about 35.
You're a traveling girl from early on, I see, in your career.
So 15 years kind of living in Europe, between, college and
you
then
least
at that
expected
point.
It. And then what happened after coffee?
Well, after coffee,
This
is an amazing story. You know, when I left America in 1985, the world was really different than when I returned to it 10 years later. Mm. When I left, really, and probably the change was good. I'm still not 100% comfortable with it, but I remember specifically coming back, going to art school, and meeting guys and them giving me their business card. Mm. Here's my number, you call me.
Yeah.
When I left 10 years before that was not happening.
Not the case,
Guys were the hunters. They were the people that would take the initiative. Women did not.
It's scary being the initiator, though.
Well, I didn't really know what to do with it,
Exactly.
I was really
uncomfortable. That's why guys share it now. I can understand it.
So I got a phone call.
So you got a call. Well,
And we talked, and we agreed to meet. And I thought, okay, this sounds like a good idea. I mean, I had been like, should I call her or should I not call her? Should I call her?
Yeah, what was going through your mind in those weeks?
Like, that left me off the hook because she called.
Right.
And,
but I love that you did, that you met, that you stepped back, you took the risk. And this is what your life has both been about, it sounds like, that you've taken risks and made choices, and against all odds.
Calculated
risks. Which brought you to this place where you now are living the dream life that people like me and our listeners would love to live in Tuscany, Americans. you know, under the Tuscan sun. We all want to be Diane Lane. You're Diane Lane. You're, who is the guy in the movie? You brought your own.
Mr. Francis Mays.
Exactly.
Mr. Francis
Mays.
Yeah. We like to think we're, you know, sort of even more Italian than they are.
But it was calculated, and you had a career in finance before, mm-hmm. which is the direct opposite of what you're doing now. You're teaching landscape drawing classes, painting.
I thought she was crazy when I heard what her business plan was. Right. She was giving
she
up.
She did have a business plan. That's
she was giving up a job for life, a well-paid executive position at the UN in Rome with a nice apartment, you know, in central Rome. She was giving that up to art school to teach, to go back to then to Italy to teach landscape painting to Americans. And I said, you know, that's. In my mind, I'm thinking that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, right.
You know? But you know,
but she's a dreamer,
working,
and let's
And I'm not leaving my corporate job, you know, and
which you had to go back to after you divorced. It sounds like
right.
To
and
stay
I worked
stable
my
and,
way
right.
up into it, mm-hmm. and I was doing sales, so. I just didn't think it was a good idea. Right. Actually, this is sort of funny because, you know, we'd got together. We lived together for a while, and you know, testing the waters. And then, you know, she would go to Italy mm-hmm. for 6 months while I stayed in Connecticut. And I had to, in my corporate job, I was sitting in my cubicle and with a windowless office.
The thing we always talk about. Thank God we have to go to a cubicle to work. But when you
I
do,
got
it's
that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was enjoying my job.
Having seen that,
at the time.
It makes this that much more.
But I got had an opportunity. It was late in the day. Business was over, but I could still use to make a long distance phone call to Italy, and I mm-hmm. called up Madine. When I got her, I could hear she picked up the phone. Was her cell phone, and I could hear the crickets in the background.
Oh my God, and that'll draw you right in. Birds, the crickets. I'm the contrast.
Oh, that couldn't have been later.
Oh, how beautiful. Oh,
is that your beeper going off? No. So I thought it was such a contrast to what I was experiencing mm-hmm. at that moment. That
how long did it take for you to get the book?
Well, I got to take it as soon as I could to try the waters and mm-hmm. go help her for a week. And
that was 96. That was sort of
right.
Yeah,
you meant 95
right time.
And yeah, I like that one of you was solid, straight. I'm going to keep us centered, and you were the fly away, you know, taking risks.
I mean, I think one of the things, you know. My real reluctance, I mean, I really didn't like the job I had. I was really miserable. I'm one of these right brain, left brain people that I'm, you know, fortunate that I can do both, but it becomes a liability after a while because it
you can
it
do
sort
everything,
of keeps
so
you
it's
back.
Hard to choose.
Yeah.
And, you know, you sort of are always being too logical and practical about, like, giving yourself over to your, like, mm-hmm. the demon, who the creative muse.
Did it help
you,
you to have Joe being the stable one to say, yes, I can bounce off of that now and be more free?
Not really, because I had made the decision before meeting him. Uh-huh. But then, you know, there were other factors that, you know, his presence, you know, certainly, you know, encouraged.
That must have been fun when you weren't expecting it to find someone you cared for so much.
Well, I think that's what happens. I think when you really are willing to you know, discover who you are and go with the deeper veins of, you know, who you your identity is when things really do open the doors
it's a
open
very,
for
very
you.
Good point when you're solid and self-exploring and not needing to go to the outside for that ego fulfillment and so on you find it it's you're finding within yourself
well I mean for a year I spent 10 years with the UN I was sort of miserable I had a few good years I had a great time in Rome I mean that was the thing I didn't want to leave Italy you know I wanted to leave the job but I also wanted to be happy in my job and I felt you know I was single I didn't have any mortgage I didn't have any children I had nothing really keeping me there it was just my own inhibitions and fears about you know failure
well, what did you learn about yourself during that time
well I just one of the things you know you can knock on door after door after door, you know, within any given situation. And if they don't open, you're not supposed to be knocking on those doors. You're not supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's not
you know, it's one of those things.
You could have said just keep knocking, but no, you took a different course and said no. It's the wrong
course. Finito. It's over.
Yeah.
And then the
change
thing is
course.
When you find the path that you're supposed to be on,
it feels right.
It's easy. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier that you're not fighting all the time. And that's sort of what happened. And, you know, meeting him, it was just a part of that whole thing. It
Interesting.
Just, everything
the
just
stream
opened.
Started flowing. You're not paddling upstream.
Completely.
What did you learn about yourself in this whole in that time?
Well, you know, like I said, I was not looking for a relationship. Oh. And we went out on this the first date, mm-hmm. and it was a 13-hour date. It just went on and on. But it was not like I was looking at my watch.
You
we
get
were
lost
nice
in
time,
it sounds
and,
like.
And, you know, we went to the museum. We had a lot in common. We enjoyed looking at art together. Mm-hmm. Then we took a walk in Prospect Park. Then we came back and went out to eat somewhere. And then she had some business at her school to, you know, to take care of, set chairs up for a performance that evening. So I went back and helped her
you
with that.
You worked with me.
You just
and,
me.
And then I listened to this great music at at her school. And
a lot of sensory stuff going on. You hear that in relationships when you see art, music. It's things happen at weddings and bar mitzvahs. People meet their partner. Yeah.
Well, we were talking about this the other day. We were thinking about, what are we going to talk about when we go on Deb's show? And one of the things we talked about is, you know, the things that we have in common. Mm-hmm. And because we spent a lot of time together.
Yeah,
24/7. We work together. We live together. You know.
Do you paint in the same studio?
Yes, we do.
Wow.
In Italy, too.
What happens when, yeah? Do
well,
you
we have you know,
you
our arguments about what music we're going to listen to.
Can we just turn our iPods?
It's going to be classical jazz or Japanese music from the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we, you know, iPods are a good solution for
yes.
that. But
Pandora. Get your own channels.
Right. So, So that first meeting, we went to look at paintings, and you actually, because paintings are something that, you know, both of us really enjoy, and I really, you know, I want to hear my own thoughts about the painting primarily, and so it's not with everyone that I want to go spend an afternoon in a museum with, and a lot of people don't even like to look at paintings.
It's hard to share, I would imagine.
They'd rather shop than
look
at paintings.
What if she didn't like what you liked, you know, that could be a deal breaker.
So, but it was really interesting, because we went and saw this painting, we talked about the painting together as we looked at it, mm-hmm. and, you know, it just felt comfortable, and Luis picked up a lot of the same things, so the same intellect, you know. So, you know, so that's what we were talking
it's
about.
It's an interesting that parallel play or whatever, looking at something and learning about each other through that depth of the painting. Very cool. What a great way to have a first date. I highly recommend that.
I was also thinking, you know, just really jumping even beyond that first date, you know, because we eventually we got married 3 years later, mm-hmm. and. I had this sort of sudden, you know, kind of, it wasn't an insight. It just was probably a moment of fear the night before we got married. We were already in Turkey saying, oh my God, why am I doing this? I've never really traveled with him because look, to me, Joe's the only person in the world I look at art with, mm-hmm. Except a few friends from art school. But even then, it's more of a personal, private thing.
It
and,
is,
you know,
yeah.
it's sort of like listening to music too, mm-hmm. I think. But so Joe, I look at art with him, but it's also, to me, traveling with someone
is
a
really
key test.
Yeah, you really get to know somebody more than living with somebody. It's true.
Absolutely. And I'm like,
how they deal with airports and all that stress and hassle.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
I
you know. Don't know if you have the same, if you want to do the same things. It's a sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. Do you want to look at museums? Do you want to go shopping?
Very revealing.
Do you want to eat the same food? You know, do you want to, you know, how are you going to react to strangers in the streets? Are you going to look like an obvious tourist? Are you going to sort of fit in, you know?
So what did you do?
Well, I thought this is a huge mistake. What are we doing here? And it was sort of too late. Like all the balls were rolling. I'm like, this is a huge mistake. But it ended. It was just a moment of
panic. Did you discuss it?
Yeah, I think we talked. We were both, like, you
we
were
sort
sick.
Of laughed about it.
We kind of laughed about it.
Because I knew some friends.
But you were in Turkey, so you had traveled there together, so you at least had gotten that
Well,
far.
I met him. I flew from Italy. He flew from America because this was the year that
together.
We were, you know, we hadn't started working together yet.
You had a 50-50 chance. Look, how many years later, you did good.
We did.
Yeah.
We really did. But that was the only time I ever had any doubt, and it really came down to, like, can we travel
and
together?
Having been independent for all those years before, which is, and you having come from a marriage, it was like, am I going to do this again?
Right.
It's a risky business.
And I also knew,
yeah.
I had some friends in high school, and when they got out of high school, they decided to go to Europe together, and they bought a van, and they went on a trip.
I hear those
stories. Well, you know, like a week into it, they wouldn't, there were no speaking.
They never
would
spoke
drive,
to each other
They would
ever
drive
again.
To a
One
town,
came home, right?
They would exit the van, and they would meet back
stories.
There, and like, hated each
it's
other
true.
For the rest
They'd
of
been
their
best
life.
Friends for life, and that was it, deal breaker right there.
So we got through that.
Yeah, very cool. I want to come back and talk about your landscape painting business. It's a school.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that in just a minute.
You're listening to The Deb Colletti Show. Voice your opinions at debcolletti.com. That's debcolletti.com. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Deb Colletti Show.
Hi, I'm back, Deb Colletti, with Madine and Joe, and we were talking about choices and challenges in your life and how you came together, you know, the second half of this part of your life, and changed it up entirely.
Well, the landscape painting idea, creating a program in Tuscany, Italy, was something that was on my mind before I even met Joe. Mm-hmm. Because, as I suggested before, it took me a really long time to leave this cozy job. It was always described as a golden cage. And for me, I had to work out in my mind, how can I stay in Italy, keep Italy, but dump this job, you know, which was the biggest kind of thing to figure out. And, you know, art had to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And for several years, and, you know, I discovered Tuscany. You know, the first time I'd ever been there was something like 1980. And it was just, you know, it was
you
a really magical
place.
You got
the international bug early, yeah.
And when I moved to Rome in 85 to work for the UN, I was actually brought over there from New York. I was previously in banking. You know, pretty early on, like I got my, you know, I'm not from New York City originally, but I never owned a car until I moved to Italy.
Wow, what a place to learn to drive.
I feel up on the sidewalk.
She wasn't in
Look out.
Listen, well, I feel I'm a member of a special club because I learned how to drive in Rome.
Seriously.
So for me, Rome is a very comfortable place to drive. Yeah. I mean, he's a better driver than I am, but I'm much more comfortable in Rome.
Like,
he
gets
a little nervous there,
right?
But he drives better in Naples than I do. I don't know what that's about.
Listen, how many people have city-by-city driving? This is good.
But in any event, you know, so I got this car, and actually when I got it, it was a BMW 2002, and it was in perfect condition, which was a very fast car. And I got the car, and I had a friend at the time, and he helped me pick it up, but I didn't know how to drive it. And I got stuck in the center of Rome when it was pouring rain. And it was like the most traumatic experience, but it got me through over the hurdle of, you know, being nervous
afraid,
about driving.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then once I, you know, reached that point, which was pretty quickly, I just every weekend would go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So early 1986, you know, I got the car in like January. A month later, we're going to Tuscany.
It made everything seem easy after that.
Yeah,
trauma.
So I go up to Tuscany, and I really became enchanted with the landscape.
No kidding.
I mean,
as an artist, you see layers and layers of beauty there.
And yeah. When I moved to Rome and took the job, it was, you know, it was very clear in my mind that by taking this job, because I knew it was sort of a cushy situation where I wouldn't have to be doing, you know, 16-hour days like you would be doing here in the financial world, that I could just check out at 5, and then the idea was that I would try to do my own painting, blah, blah. That didn't necessarily work out.
It's one thing to be a painter, but it's another thing to decide to teach painting, too.
Oh, sure. I mean, but, you know, the thing where that became clear is, like, I've always loved school, mm-hmm. and I've always loved learning, and I've always loved reading, and I'm, I think, a natural communicator, so
yes,
it all kind of fit
to
together.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt really frustrated about art education because I felt that no one was ever teaching me enough.
It's out of want and need. What you wanted and needed, you started to deliver to your clients.
That's exactly what I did, Deb. I mean, I just felt like people need to know this, so I'm going to assume everyone knows nothing.
Right.
And start them at the beginning.
And what do you need? What did you need that you weren't getting, and you filled that niche?
Well,
obviously.
And that, you know, and then then personally, I also needed to try to use Tuscany as a vehicle to do this. And this is way before, you know, the fashion that Tuscany became fashionable with all these books.
You made it fashionable.
You know, we saw on the subway right over here was a poster, advertising poster, and it's a picture of these iconic cypress trees.
Yes. That are right near our house.
They're right, we see all the time,
exactly.
And they're in every image.
And they're, drawing people over in droves. If we could just afford it with a euro now, hello.
Well, see, in those days it was different, too, because it was still the lira, but I had this friend, so I started going to Tuscany in 86, and to make it short, I just kept going back, and then I started finding these amazing places, and then I would go continuously to one place, and I said to this guy, you know, many years later, mm-hmm. you know, 86 to 94, I met him maybe 87, when I was kind of trying to articulate in my mind a plan of a way I could do this, I said to him, would you like me to bring you more clients? You know, I could figure out a way, because he cooked for people. And he at the time, you know, the more you're somewhere, the more sophisticated your tastes are. So we sort of outgrew him eventually. But in the beginning, it was something, it was very family style, big tables, very rustic. People were into it.
Right.
And it was really unspoiled at the time. So I figured out this way to, I had a one-week, plan and, course structure, which I derived completely out of my MFA program here in New York City. So it had a lot of content.
But drawing on your experience and your passion for what you wanted to do made it. I love that you hooked it up with somebody else's business to bring in the art interest. He was a chef, or
he cooked and he owned this. He was a farmer, really.
Right.
He was a farmer who had, been savvy enough.
Cooperative kind of thing. And what do people want to do in Tuscany? Drink wine, see the beautiful sights, paint eventually, and eat great food. Perfect.
And it was at the time we started, it was in San Gimignano, which if you remember,
gorgeous.
It's all the town of the little towers. And this was before the bus tours started arriving. So it was at the time a really, it had its own magical quality to it. We subsequently, the business was there like 7 or 8 years. Joe and I worked there together because we started working together in 99, I guess, after we got married. And then we just suddenly, Joe doesn't believe in renting at all.
Right.
So as soon as we got married,
which is what supported you through the early years, it sounds like, of this business endeavor and owning property and managing that and having the financial background and corporate.
So we, our first property was a garage, which actually helped get us our permessi di soggiorno, which are permissions to be in Italy for long periods of time instead of just the 90 days that a tourist visa will get you.
Yeah.
And we sold that subsequently, and we made money. But we eventually found we looked at something like 42 properties. I think we told you about we counted the stairs on each one of them, right?
Because apparently, yes.
And we found those 67 stairs. In Buonconvento, which is very much different than San Gimignano because it doesn't have the immense amount of tourism that goes through there. It's really easy to park.
Right.
It's really tiny.
It's actually more beautiful.
But also you became fully immersed Italians. I mean, when you're living outside of tourist areas and stuff and investing, that was, again, brave choices.
Oh, we got a beautiful place. I mean, it wasn't beautiful when we walked in. It was a chicken coop or something.
Pigeon coop.
Literally.
Oh,
the Italian pigeons.
But,
they're something.
Nice
doves over there.
Turquoise walls.
We call them pigeons here. They're doves in Italy. What was your reaction of your family and friends when you took off and moved to Italy? You especially. This has been in your blood. But Joe?
Well, that's a good question. I'm from Florida, and my family, what there is of it, is mostly in Florida, although I have cousins.
Whole different world,
here.
Right?
And, I have yet to be able to convince any of them to come visit. Huh. They don't like to leave the area. But I have my cousin from up here that lives around the corner from me in the East Village, and she's been over a couple of times and has assisted us in the... we need, when we have big classes, we need assistance for teaching and for cooking.
I'm available.
And, Lori's been there a couple of times, and I think she's coming back soon. And,
because people think, it's risky stuff. They put up a mirror to other people when you do risky things like that and go and change your life, leave a marriage, change, run off to Italy. It's a big deal, and people react to that. Was there any backlash?
No.
Good.
Everybody said fine, but, they don't want to go visit.
Yeah.
Everybody gives lip service.
That's an 8-hour trip. I don't want to get on that plane. Yeah, it's interesting.
So far, where is that?
Yeah.
And it's, Florida is warm already, so they don't.
Mars, Venus, how does that enter? Is it really true? There is a Mars, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, when you work 24/7 like that?
No. I don't think
so. No,
good.
Not really.
I'd like to disprove that.
We had an interesting time because... through my corporate job, my immediate superior, he left the job, and he left to go work with his wife. And his wife had started a business, and
she was doing
the business there was they were doing it was antiques and used furniture, and they were doing closeouts of people's homes and, you know, having yard sales or estate sales, and then they would have auctions of pieces, et cetera. And they would work all the time. They worked together. The whole family got involved with it. You know, it's like when we would be, I remember one time in San Gimignano, we were unloading the van one night. It was like, we'd been down in Campania, and we were unloading the van. It was like 11 o'clock on a Saturday night, you know. And, you know, I started thinking about, no, John Morawski, this is the kind of thing that they did, right?
Because,
oh, you know,
so
it's
nice.
Like, oh, we're having a nice family outing, you know, it's like...
but you're pointing out a very good trend I hope we're going towards, which is people choosing that in life, choosing to work with their partners, or picking their partners out of friendship first, which is how you guys kind of started, and then you find what you're passionate about together and do that. It used to be the corporate job, the woman stays home with the kids, I mean, back when we grew up, and, and or parallel lives. Coming back together. It's really a wonderful way to live life. Do you have corners you go to when things are... do you have moments where things aren't perfect?
Yes.
It doesn't look like it from here, but...
Yeah, it is, but you know...
It would seem to be inhuman, if not...
I remember when we were first going out, and we had our first argument, and it was a ridiculous sort of argument, you know, because I had roommates.
They always are, right?
I had roommates, and one of my roommates had gotten a case of citrus fruit, and...
you remember
these things. I don't even remember these things.
You know, and he invited us to eat the citrus fruit, and I respectfully declined,
but the
fruit, you know, just sat there, and sat there, and sat there, until it was no longer edible, and it moved into some kind of green, moldy,
science experiments.
Fruit flies.
So are
week
you,
three.
So and, do you fancy yourself as the big picture and Joe? Yeah. You're more like the, because that's what's becoming evident in this interview.
True. Yeah.
Is that Joe likes to talk about these little tiny things.
The fruit flies.
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
It's sort of, I think, you know, life is a contradiction just generally, and it's funny because when I think about that's certainly evident now, and
just
it just depends on how
so
your
well.
Minds work. But right. Honestly, when it looks at our capabilities and you know, like why we can work together so well is that we have different skill sets.
Division of labor.
He is
there.
An idea guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has the big general idea, and I'm the one that can execute and implement.
Yeah.
So I can become the... it's like the opposite when we're actually operational.
This is
very complimentary.
Yeah.
What's that?
This is camouflage.
This is camouflage. This is interesting, the dynamic, because you're as chatty, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's a nice give and take there.
But we might shift. I mean,
we might
the balance may just totally go in a different direction, which is sort of a nice thing, though.
So our argument.
But you give way. So
back to the fruit flies.
This is my point. He wants to
and
talk about the argument.
But there
he's
going
to circle back.
There was this thing that happened that, you know, Medin wanted me to throw the damn fruit away. And I said... No, it's
me
not
too.
My fruit. And this precipitated, you know, some tension.
Oh,
and but it was funny because when we talked about it, like walking away from the house down to the truck, we were going somewhere, and you know, it rose and rose and rose. But when we got in the truck and we drove away, like the tension dissipated.
Huh.
And this was like you know, after my bad experience in relationships, my antennae were up,
right.
And so I looked like what our first argument was
right.
all about,
what
how
was,
it ended.
Yeah.
You know, did I hear about this like later, 6 months from now? You know those fruit flies,
the kitchen sink
so
arguments.
You
I call it everything,
flies.
Including the kitchen sink. You're mad at,
but you didn't hear about it, so you
right.
know it dissipated. So I knew you had a feeling about
thing?
What you know.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so if we have arguments, how are they going to work out? You
resolve,
know?
Yeah.
And there was no overhanging tension from it. You know, we got. We
which kind of speaks to the fact there wasn't something else underneath it. It was just about the fruit. Sometimes it's never about the fruit, but it's about you pissed me off last week when you cut me off in the sentence or put me down or whatever.
I threw away the fruit.
You eventually threw away the fruit. You didn't wait for the kids to do it themselves, so to speak.
The
roommates. The epilogue.
You're listening to The Deb Colletti Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Deb Colletti Show.
Hi, Deb Colletti back with you now, resuming my conversation with Medin and Joe.
I feel like extraordinarily lucky because, you know, I mean, we did meet later in life. I mean, I've never been an advocate of, like, getting married at 20 years old.
You know, I know a lot of people do that, and
I wish we knew all we know now back when I was younger. Yeah,
I think you need a lot of time out there, but not everybody. Everybody's different to understand who you are. You know, and I had several relationships before I met Joe, and a lot of them were just highly conflictual, mm-hmm. like constantly. You know, just a sustained tension that you just could never get
rid of. Again, that path of least it now became easier when you find the right fit.
It's just the right
chemistry. It's always a struggle. That's right.
You know? It's just knocking on the door with the axe, you know.
Yeah, like, exactly. Choose the door. Go a different
direction.
Here's Johnny.
No, that's and that you can find it halfway through your life when you least expect it, when you're not, you know, desperately looking for it too. Which is, I think, the
I think that's
message.
The secret right
that's
there.
The secret.
It's like just looking for yourself and working
you,
on yourself.
You know, Joni was also just a huge part of our life because she also introduced me to the person that sold us her apartment in New York.
Right.
And
two apartments in
really.
New York.
Really?
No.
She's
first
somebody
one
we need to know. I think everybody needs to meet Joan and have a Joan in their life. She sounds great.
What's the division of labor now?
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's in terms of the nice thing about living in New York is when we're in New York, we're focusing on our own art. I mean, there is promotion involved in the landscape painting programs mm-hmm. because, you know, we're 6 months there.
You have a beautiful website.
We have this,
we
have a calendar and everything, mm-hmm. but we've done it, you know, it's now 15, 16 years going. You know, we advertise with the same magazines, we get editorial coverage, we give speaking. You know,
lectures
and things like that. So it's I won't say it's on cruise control, but when we're in America, we're focusing on our own respective art. So they're really, the division of labor is he's doing what he's doing, I'm doing what I'm doing, you know, we're coming together on it. And we agree that that's really important. Mm-hmm.
What's your percentage of time here?
Well, you know, it's not as much as we'd like it to be, but we get here like the end of November.
Sounds pretty ideal.
Like 1 December and we leave
But the winter,
the
could
April.
You flip that? The winter here, not so much.
No. I love the winter here.
Really?
I mean, I love the winter. I don't care. It's freezing, yes. It's terrible.
And
but
we
it's
would
a
come,
city.
It's a city. It's right.
We would
the
come
pace.
To New York sooner, except that we do once a year. Mm-hmm. The new place we live is right near Montalcino.
Beautiful.
And when we discovered our first night living in our apartment, Medine went out and was buying food and walked by this little fruit stand, and it has a sign, you know, fresh truffles, our truffles. So we found out that this is a white truffle zone. So you have white truffles, and then we live next to Montalcino, which is Brunello. And then you start to get, you know, then you start getting into the food of the area. And we found out a lot about the food in the area, you know. And
but so you got stuck there. You couldn't come back to New York.
Well, what we do is we offer a one-week food tour during the white truffle season.
Fantastic.
Which is November.
Wow.
And
we
really have a festival in the town across the way from us. And we, for 1 week, so we're always there,
be there for that.
Through
yeah.
November. Right?
Nice. Well, that's, again, out of something, designing your life around these things that you're passionate about. What a wonderful thing. It is everyone's dream, and that you did it. What was the tipping point for you? The whole combination of New York and Italy, I mean, that really is the city. You said you need the city, the pace of the city.
Yeah, well, I think both of us basically are sort of urban cosmopolitan mm-hmm. types, mm-hmm. and you know we also have strong aesthetic sense. So and we like
you
nature.
Need the
so
nurture. Yeah, this nurtures you, I'm sure, to see architecture and all the
just the human energy.
Energy.
Yeah,
I think
energy.
You know we. I like to just describe it as. You know, in the warmer months of the year, we go physical,
mm-hmm.
and then we go intellectual when it's cold. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we come back here, we get ideas, we get stimulated, mm-hmm. Comparing ourselves to other people. Because mm-hmm. I don't think you go anywhere in any career unless you're comparing yourself
right.
to your peer
and
groups.
Learning. You're always learning.
Yeah, you're
and
always
looking,
kind of
yep.
moving. There's always like a little bit of edginess to it. Which, when you're living in the country in this beautiful landscape,
right.
where I can disappear into the woods, like
right.
I
you could get lazy.
You get lazy. You know, that serves its time. Right. When you're there, but we spent a week. Winter
it's so
there.
Well managed. This makes so much sense for people to you know that you've kind of done it like a business plan.
Well, it wasn't all that intentional.
Here.
It sort of
yeah.
evolved. You know,
yeah.
we happened to, thanks to Joe and his like real estate savvy and mm-hmm. insistence on buying real estate. Mm-hmm. Like when we bought
Choosing
these
well,
properties,
yeah, it's an itch. I get it. No, it's my itch too, and it really it supports us. But it's the passion for doing like what I'm doing here, talking to interesting people and what you're doing and creating beautiful, because you have to. It's your drive.
This is kind of another facet that's happened with a painting. We, in the mid-90s, there was a book that came out. Peter Galassi wrote this book on Corot in Italy. And he talks, and then there were several shows showing about the early open-air painting movement that was going on in Italy. And Medine and I went, you know, we saw these paintings of this particular location. It's Civita Castellana, which is just north of Rome. And we said, well, let's go there. You know, have you ever been there? Medina had never been there. I'd never been there. And so that began when we just, you know, just pulling off the main highway, the A1.
Going to Rome.
Going to Rome. Yeah. We pulled off and went there. And the first time, you know, we just didn't get it. You know, it's like we went over this bridge, we came into this town, and we'll circle around and out of the town. It's like, what the heck was that? You know, it's like, I wouldn't necessarily want to come stay here.
Right. Okay?
But what's happened from that is that we continued to go back there, and then we also researched. We researched the entire area
where
all these places that the artists of that period went. And this is from the late 18th century, in you know, early 18th century even, up until, you know, let's say the 1840s and 50s. And it became a really interesting, you know, delving into the history learning about Italy in a different kind of way through a different lens into the place. We learned about food. We learned about the wines
and together encouraging
and it was totally totally unplanned,
right?
And it just became more and more interesting
and supporting each other.
Shed light on what the heck we're doing as painters today was really interesting, because that was the finishing touch for artists in the 19th century. Like tons of American artists went over to Italy and to learn the skill and to be exposed to the history and the art of the past there. And it turns out Medina and I also have in common, we love to read, we love history, and then we learned you could reach out and touch history in a way, growing up in Florida, I didn't experience it like that way.
Yeah, you would not see in picture books.
And the oldest building in our town was built in 1899.
Yeah, a nice Spanish something,
It was a big wooden Victorian house.
But how great in the conversations only bring it to a deeper level, too, to discuss as you're learning the different layers.
Well, I think, one of the things that we haven't sort of mentioned is, the additional challenge in deciding to work together and move to Italy together is that there wasn't an equality here. I had spent already more than 10 years in Italy. I had this major advantage. I speak
Italian. I was going to say, did you eventually learn German? You
had to... Un poco.
Un poco, yeah.
Poco. Really. Toscano.
Poco.
Poco. But...
So you don't speak Italian much, and you do, Medine?
I speak Italian fluently,
So she takes care of ordering the food. No,
well, he can order
Italian.
We can do restaurant Italian. Yeah.
But the whole point was that I was aware that there was a genuine risk to our potentially happy relationship.
Hadn't traveled together. You had already dominated Italy, so to speak.
And I didn't want to be the person that was sort of determining everything and discovering this. And again, like Joe said, it was just something that came upon us because these itineraries, let's say, of the early open-air painting movement, that they radiated out of Rome. They went north, east, and south. All the towns along these itineraries are completely forgotten today. Mm. And I lived in Rome 10 years, and I had never been to 90% of them. So the cool thing was that this was a project we could both do it.
Yeah.
So when we discovered it together,
territory.
It was
That's
uncharted.
Wonderful.
There we are.
I love this. It's so inspiring. We are almost at the end of our time, but I do want to say, listeners are going to say, well, how do I take a class? How long is the class? How do people sign up?
Well, we have a website. It's easy, and this is where Joe's the idea person, and I'm not.
There you go.
Landscapepainting.com.
It's tough to remember. Let me think. Perfect.
Look that
That's
up,
a great
and
name.
You'll
Perfect.
Find it all.
Yes, and it's a beautiful website, and people can go for a week.
We have four different programs a week at a time. Mm-hmm. The entry-level program.
Mm-hmm. People for dummies like me.
Who have never painted in their lives, maybe never drawn. I mean, I think it's important
that people have the interest. Mm-hmm. But we've had a really good track record. We've had people who started with us in 1996 who still come and are now
great.
Like autonomous artists themselves and
they're
doing pretty well.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of, it's
well,
very
gratifying.
You came
to me through two students of yours, adults, that went over there and just were madly in love with you. You need to meet them and interview them. So,
that's
great, great references. Great references. Thank you so much for being here
this
with me
really
today.
This was really a lot of fun.
And I always sign off by saying, love you, mean it. What would be your sign off?
Ci vediamo in Italia.
Yay.
Ciao, baby.
Ciao, baby. Ciao, bella. Thank you very much.
Sure.
You've been listening to The Deb Colletti Show. Voice your opinions at debcolletti.com. That's debcolletti.com. Join us next week for another edition of The Deb Colletti Show.